Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening. We are in Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 23. We continue the story of Joseph, which is actually part of the toledot of Jacob or Jacob's life, because Jacob's not done. We're just going to focus on Joseph, what takes place in Egypt, setting the stage for Jacob to come down with his family and settle in Egypt, which will lead to what takes place there with Moses and the Exodus and all. So we left off with Judah back up in Canaan in chapter 38, where he did have a sexual sin. But of course, that turned out to be part of the line of the kings, even in Jesus' genealogy through Perez. Now we go to chapter 39, and it begins by saying, just like you see right there on page 1, I've got all the notes written down there in the English Standard Version on the notes. It says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there." So several things there in that verse that kind of catch up. It's, you know, now the story continues after Judah. Now it continues down with Joseph. He was taken down to Egypt. I've got a map there that I just, you know, just a pencil drawing. But that is actually from when the brothers and Jacob come down. They come down from Hebron, but you know Joseph came down the coastal plain with the Ishmaelites or the Midianites, the traders, and here who ends up selling him is the Ishmaelites. So we left off with Joseph being in a pit and then being sold. Now we resume with him being bought by Potiphar, and Potiphar is a familiar Egyptian name. There's an Egyptian spelling for it and everything. But he's considered one of Pharaoh's officials. So he's an official. He works for Pharaoh. He is called the captain of the guard. And as we go through this story, one of the things I want you to consider, and I'll point it out several times, and it's pretty clear once you think about it, is Joseph is going to end up in Potiphar's household in charge of everything that Potiphar has, except the food that he eats. But then when this event takes place in this chapter, it should call for execution. It should call for torture and execution. A normal crime would call for a penalty. But there's no such thing as a prison system in the ancient world like we have in our world today, where it's just, you know, you're going to serve time, you know, 20 years in prison. You're in prison for a decision to be made for your execution or until there's a penalty. Joseph is going to end up committing a crime, especially being a slave, that he doesn't commit the crime. He's accused of the crime. It's apparently believed that it took place, and he should be executed, especially being a slave. But instead, he's put in prison, and he's put in the house of the captain of the guard. So he's put under. See, Pharaoh is, it says, the Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. He's in charge of this prison where political prisoners are sent, and we're going to eventually meet him next week, the baker and the cupbearer. And they're not there for punishment. They are there until the decision is made, because one of them is executed and one of them is restored. So again, the assumption is there was an assassination plot revealed on Pharaoh. It could have been, you know, the baker or the butler, and they're both put in prison. It's investigated. Once the investigation, FBI goes through all the files and realizes, it's the baker, and he's sent to execution. The butler or the cupbearer is restored. So they weren't doing time. They're just being held in place until the decision was made. Joseph ends in the same place. He ends up in a place. He's not doing prison time. He ends up there being held like they're waiting for a decision, which gives the impression, as we'll see, Potiphar's not real clear that this is the truth. That it's like, because if he was convinced that Joseph was guilty, it would be torture, execution, and we're done here. And no one even would blink an eye. But instead, he's still apparently in Potiphar's house instead of being in charge of all of the stuff and the servants and whatever he's in charge of. He's now moved to a different part of Potiphar's house, the captain of the guard, and is placed in the prison and is then given responsibility. So a lot of things are going to be taking place here. One of the things that's important is Yahweh or the Lord. It's going to be the Lord is, we can admire Joseph, his administrative skills, his communication skills, his ability to interpret dreams. But throughout this whole thing, the Lord, and Joseph is always going to give the Lord credit. The Lord is, it's the narrator is going to tell us, and Joseph found favor in Potiphar's eyes because of the Lord. Not because he was, Joseph was so skilled, that's true, but Potiphar noticed him because the Lord recognized him. Joseph, when his brothers come down, they're going to feel guilty. And he says, don't worry about it. The Lord sent me here. It's like the whole Midianite, Ishmaelite, the cistern traveling down being sold. Don't worry about it. The Lord was in control of this. That's why we're here today. And so this one of the themes throughout this is going to be the Lord brings Joseph to Egypt. The Lord shows favor, gives Joseph favor with Potiphar. In fact, Potiphar's house is going to be blessed because Joseph is there, which is going to be similar to Laban's house being blessed because Jacob was there, which goes back to, again, the Abrahamic blessing. Abraham. The Abrahamic blessing, those who bless you, I will bless. And wherever Abraham goes, there was blessing. That continues down through Isaac and Jacob. And now that is with Joseph. And Joseph is, wherever he's at, he's going to be, the people that are involved in his life are going to be blessed because the Lord is with Joseph. And why is the Lord with Joseph? Because the Lord was with Abraham. And I think that's kind of a theme as we read through this. Chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. Now you can blame the Ishmaelites, but the Ishmaelites were just God's tool to get Joseph where he wanted them. Again, now here you can stop and have your daily devotion. It's like how many things in your life have happened and God was just using that event, that person, your decision, and I can do this, my bad decisions that God says, well, I can work with that and get you right where I want you. A lot of times those bad decisions involve some kind of discipline and learning process, but you look back at your life and the Lord is with us and he has caused these things or has used everything to get you to this place, which is a very humbling thought when you consider that, and overwhelming, and gives you peace, helps you go back to sleep at night, although you'll never figure it all out. Okay, the Lord, there it is, chapter 39, verse 2, the Lord, and that's Yahweh, was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. He is a servant, but he's living in the house, not in the slave quarters or the servant quarters. He's living in the house, and Joseph himself is prospering. Now, again, we should be careful. He's got, you know, a yacht, and he's got, you know, this big investment here, and he's, that can be included, but the ideal of this prospering is it's God's will is being done. Joseph is safe. Joseph is continuing. Joseph's character, if you're going to prosper in the New Testament, we're going to read James on Sunday, like we did last week, but throughout there, that's talking about being blessed and growing. That's spiritual growth. That's becoming more like Christ. I mean, it's hard for God. I mean, just imagine you're God, and his goal for you is to be conformed into the image of his Son, Jesus Christ. And so he looks down at you and looks at me, and I'm interested in prospering in this physical world. Well, like James says, well, that's too bad because this is all passing away. It's like, but look what I got. Look what I, it's like, right, but that's so temporary. So when God really looks out and wants to bless you, he's going to help you be conformed into the image of his Son, Jesus Christ. So that's something valuable. Yeah, but what about all this stuff? It's like, well, blessed are you because you don't have any, because you're being conformed into the image of the eternal Son of God. What you should feel sorry for is the person that's got all this stuff and is not concerned about being conformed. Maybe they're a believer, but they're all their life is here. Well, once they die, and this stuff itself is passing away, they're going to be left with eternal things that feel sorry for them. They didn't get much in eternity. And so that word prosper, again, I think that means if things are going well for him, I think he's being taken care of. But if you, again, I don't know if you should or not, throw that into the New Testament concept, he's maturing. He's becoming godlike. He's maturing in his person as, you know, becoming more understanding of God. And again, he is. We'll see. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, I've got just in the square there, the Hebrew text, I've got the word Yahweh in the square. So you can see that that is the word Yahweh. And that's going to be used in all these references here where it says Lord. That is Yahweh. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. So Potiphar is seeing the results. He's seeing that the Lord is with him. How? Because he's seeing that Joseph is successful. Now, I don't know what he's observing, if Joseph's polishing the silverware faster than anybody else, or if Joseph is managing the financial department better than anybody else, or since Joseph's taken over paying the grocery bills or ordering the food, or whatever he's doing, it's like, We've saved money. We've been more productive. Maybe he's over servants. Maybe he's telling people, you know, how to plant the crops or who's going to plant the crops. And we can have three people plant crops. Two people can do the baking. A couple of people come over here. And we've got, you know, 10 extra servants that we'll go ahead. We'll put in an addition on the building. It's like, wow. It's like we didn't even have to get more servants. And you've got all this done. Something like that is happening. It's like, my gosh, everything's prospering. You're blessed. I'm blessed because. And did Potiphar look at him and say, you know what? Yahweh's with you. Did he make that connection? Does he have that insight? Or is he simply seeing the results of Yahweh being with him? And the narrator says, Potiphar is seeing these results, and so he realizes that these are good results because Yahweh's with him. Is he seeing the results and doesn't know who to credit it to? So again, be careful with that. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. And so he's prospering. He's doing a great job. And part of that is Joseph's character, Joseph's training, he was created for this by God. But we also have to consider Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and now Joseph is manifesting that Abrahamic covenant. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Now he's his personal assistant. He's not just out there working with the servants or whatever he's doing. He's now right there. He's, you know, like the assistant to everything he's doing. Everything goes through him. In fact, Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. So Joseph is now taking care of everything. Potiphar, he's signing checks. He's hiring, he's firing. Potiphar's not worrying about anything. He's just on the golf course. I mean, he's just having a great time. He just checks in with Joseph, and Joseph's up and running everything. Even though Joseph had been through hardships, that's point one I've got under chapter 39, verse 4. Now, where would I be if I had been put in a cistern and my father had chosen me to be the heir and the leader and my brothers hated me? They threw me in a cistern. And then I got sold into slavery. Would I make it this far, or would I have been so miserable on my trip down in slavery? Because he probably wasn't having a nice trip. They took care of him because he's the product they're going to sell. Now, they weren't beating him and whipping him, because they're going to put him on the slave. They're going to sell him. So they want a good, healthy-looking slave. So they're feeding him. They're watering him. But they're just treating him like product. What would I have done? Would I have been too grumpy, too disappointed, you know, too complaining that it's like, this guy's not worth it. They just would have fed me to the lions or something. But Joseph made it this far. A lot of hardships. Got sold. He stood publicly probably somewhere and people bid on him. Potiphar bought him. Great. Now I got to go here. Probably started off in some menial job. It's like, well, I'm better than this. And I had things good at my dad's. And how much complaining would I have done compared to Joseph, who gets here? And going through all this, like I said, even though Joseph had been through hardships and had been treated unfairly, have you ever been treated unfairly? It's not my fault. It's not my fault I'm here. Well, Joseph, it wasn't his fault. but able to maintain a personality and a work ethic that was recognized as beneficial to others and not a detriment to individuals or society or to Potiphar. It's like, I mean, I can imagine myself being in a position where someone hears me talking, sees me my bad work effort because I'm upset about something, and I'm a detriment to other people, I'm a detriment to my employer, I'm a detriment to society, and they just put me somewhere and just say, just wash the dishes and put them away. What a miserable person. That could have been me. Could have been Joseph. But Joseph somehow avoided all that self-pity, avoided all the excuses, it's not my fault, I deserve better, but somehow that it didn't drag him down. Chapter 39, verse 5, from the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian. Again, it doesn't say Potiphar, it says the Egyptian, meaning this is a foreigner. Just like Nehemiah is going to bring blessing to the Persian court, Daniel's going to bring blessing to Nebuchadnezzar's court, Jacob brought blessing to Laban's household, Joseph now is bringing blessing to the foreigner, the Egyptian. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had. Not on everything Joseph touched, but on everything Potiphar had, well, because Joseph is there. Both in the house and in the field. So there were some crops involved in this. And Joseph now is overseeing all of it. And so there's the blessing and it's recognized. Chapter 39, verse 6. Now this would be the third time. Potiphar put him in charge of the servants. Now he made him his assistant. He's in charge of everything. And now it says, is this a third promotion? Chapter 39, verse 6. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now, again, that I think that can be seen not as repetitive, but this is just step one, step two, and step three. The only thing Potiphar's taking care of himself is the food he's eating. And it's not clear why the food he eats, but it could be one of two things. One, Egyptians may have had, and there's reports about this, it's not clear, you know, because of archaeology and things that are written, they may have had very specific style of food and eating. They didn't eat a lot of meat potentially because of, you know, the human waste product from it. So they stayed more with, you know, like, you know, vegetables, and they drank beer. You know, they produced beer. We're not talking tavern, but that was the beer they produced from the grain. And they ate that. And so they're kind of picky on what they ate, and they didn't want someone else messing with it. Or it could be because Joseph is a great servant, but he's still a Hebrew. He's still possibly unclean. And you can touch this, you can work with this, you can work with the money, you can work with the servants, wash my clothes, but you can't be touching my food. Or you can't. Now again, does that mean Joseph was running around like a maid? I think we're way past the ideal that he's just, you know, the butler or the maid taking care of stuff. But in other words, the food was something that was potentially, this is Egyptian. I don't want anybody besides an Egyptian dealing with the food. It's going to come up later when Joseph's brothers come to eat with him. You remember the story. And his brothers come, and Joseph's sitting up at a table by himself, and he's got Egyptian food. And his brothers come and sit in order of their birth at their assigned seats, and they are brought Hebrew food because it says it was wrong or unclean for an Egyptian to eat with a Hebrew. And so by the time his brothers get there, Joseph's, you know, they even call him the Egyptian. I mean, Joseph is acting, looking, speaking, dressing, eating like an Egyptian. There's that song, you know, dance like an Egyptian. Then Steve Martin pops in your mind, right? I know that was a great, those are some great comedy back then. Of course, back then it was always better back then. We're at that time of life. It's like back then it was funny. Okay, but. Anyway, so Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome. And I've got those two words written down there. Joseph, handsome is the word, in form, and handsome in appearance. And so both words, they're the same word, well-built and handsome. And it's the word handsome, it also means beautiful, pleasant. And so what it is saying is Joseph was handsome in form. He was beautiful in form, meaning he had the strength, he had the body. But he was also handsome in appearance, meaning it was a fine thing to look at Joseph, which is, means he probably went fast on the slave block or the slave market or however they did that. Well, I mean, it says right there that he is handsome or beautiful in form, and he is pleasant or handsome to look at. Chapter 39, verse 7, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. Now, if you look in the Hebrew box there, that is two words. This is all she says. She does a lot of looking, but this is all she says to Joseph. And those two words translated are, lie with me. And so that's what it's translated in English properly, come to bed with me, but basically she says, sleep with me. And she's demanding, she's aggressive. But he refused. He's not going to go to bed with her. But he refused, and he gives her three reasons. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. It would be a break of confidence. I can't do this. He's trusted me with everything. I can't violate that trust. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. He says, I got to be responsible with what he's given me. You, I can't do that because you're his wife. That would be adultery. That would be not just a break of responsibility, but a break of trust. That's the second reason. And then a very important, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Forget Potiphar. Forget your marriage relationship. If it's just me and God, I can't do it. If you're okay with it, Potiphar never finds out about it, and life goes on as usual, I've still sinned before God. It's not right for my boss. It's not right to violate the marriage covenant, and it's not right because God says it's wrong. And so those are his reasons, and I've got those things written down there. Interesting, I thought this was cool, interesting, revealing, because adultery, there's all kinds of sins that people can commit, and the Bible talks about them. But adultery is kind of, especially in Proverbs and other places, Proverbs 6 indicates there is no recovery, no payment, no excuse for adultery. For example, if a person were to violate someone's wife, how do you go, oh, I'm sorry, I'll pay that back? I mean, that's impossible. You can't, well, you can sleep with my wife? Is what that you can, well, I'll give you another wife? How much does she cost? I'll buy her. I mean, there's nothing you can do if you've slept with someone's wife. Now then, this is not me. This is right here. Chapter 6 of Proverbs, verse 27. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Okay, you carry fire, you're going to burn your clothes. Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? The answer is no. And so it is with sexual sins or adultery. So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. None who touch her will go unpunished. You can't commit adultery and say, well, I dodged that bullet. No, it's coming back like a boomerang. It's hard for our culture. It's hard for us to understand this, especially, you know, we're atheistic, we're humanistic. You know, everyone gets to make their own decision. It's like, right, but you see, there's this force called, in the physical world, called gravity. I'm sure there's people that would argue about gravity, and there's probably ways of countering gravity, you know, like flight or speed or something. But gravity's going to work every time. And that's what this is saying. You know, you can't jump off a skyscraper and not fall to the ground because there's gravity. You can't commit adultery and not get punished. There's going to be... Now, I'm not, it's like, well, why are you so judgmental? I'm not judgmental. I'm just saying if you jump off of a building, you're going to be pulled by gravity. If you commit adultery, this verse in the text of Scripture, the author being the same one who created the universe, created moral reality, you will not go unpunished. People do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he is hungry. In fact, we start a government program. And rightfully, I mean, it's like, okay, these people, they're in poverty. And so they're going to be crime. They're trying to feed their families. Well, can we help somehow? But the church even. There's crime in this area. These people are hungry. Even the church say, well, let's start a program and help these people. So how do you help the people? Well, you don't blame them for the theft. You try to feed them so they stop stealing. Well, a pastor would do that. Well, here's this guy sleeping with all the wives in the church. Well, obviously, he's sexually hungry. Well, how do we deal with that? Well, we'll have right next to the other rooms, you know, we've got the kitchen, we've got the entertainment center, we've got the youth room, we've got the nursery. We'll have right here where we've got extra women. Well, I mean, you can't fix that. You can't. That's wrong. You can't. There's no way you can fix that. So you can't blame a thief. But if he is caught, he will pay sevenfold. Now, if you do say it's a thief, how do you pay it? The penalty was you steal a loaf of bread, you've got to pay seven loaves back. And everybody, okay, well, that's a punishment. We got it back with interest. Did you learn your lesson? He will give all the goods in his house. He who commits adultery lacks sense. You haven't thought this through. You can steal a loaf of bread. People may help you. People may say, well, okay, you stole one, you got to pay seven back. But if you think you're going to treat adultery the same way, you don't have sense. He who does it, you destroy yourself. It's not like, well, now that I hurt that person, I hurt these people, I hurt society. No, you've destroyed yourself. He will get wounds and dishonor, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. For jealousy makes a man furious, and he will not spare when he takes revenge. He will accept no compensation. You're not going to pay him money. And he will refuse, though you multiply gifts. There's no coming back. And so anyway, that's Proverbs right there, not off subject, but from another book. And now Joseph, we're living right here. Joseph is sold. Again, this is not absolute. I wonder if it's up a little bit earlier. But we're 1898. Pharaoh's going to have dreams. 1885. Here's the Pharaoh. Sin Worset the third, possibly. Amenhot the third, possibly. We'll talk about that later. But he's at this time in history, after 1900 BC, probably before 1700 BC, and he realizes, you can't do this. I cannot commit adultery. It'd break my trust. It would be a violation of the marriage covenant, and it'd be a sin before God. And he knows this is coming. Now, how does Joseph know that? Maybe he was taught that, or maybe he's watched and heard stories about, you know, Abraham and Hagar. Maybe he's heard stories about Jacob and his four wives. He's heard stories about Reuben, his older brother. He's maybe heard the story about Judas. I mean, there's all kinds of stories. Plus, he lived up there by Shechem. So he knows this is not something I'm going to do. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day. Now, this was not a one-time event. This was not like, oops, that was an awkward moment. Glad I dodged that bullet. No, this is day after day. She's made up her mind. She wants him to come to bed with her. Two words, sleep with me. He refused to go to bed with her or even, now watch, again, whenever this story is told, that's why this is one of the big points, or even to be with her. How do you avoid sexual temptation? You stay away from it. Goes back to, how can you hold fire next to your chest without burning your clothes? How can you walk on coals without burning your feet? You're going to. If you hold fire on your chest, you're going to burn your clothes. And if you're around Potiphar's wife and she's constantly begging you to get in bed with her, how long are you going to be able to avoid that? Now, and Joseph, we can say he's a great man, but the very fact he avoided her probably means it's like, well, no, I have no feelings for her. I have no sexual tendencies. I'm not even interested. It's kind of like, I mean, the man's a man. And so the best way to keep this, letting myself slip into sin, is just, I'm not going to be with her. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties. He's probably got an office set up somewhere. and none of the household servants was inside. Now, as you go through history, the writings of Josephus, and I'm not sure exactly where I get this from, but there apparently was a feast. Again, this is not biblical. This is from extra biblical information. It was an Egyptian holiday. You know, everybody's down at the New Year's parade. And Potiphar's, you know, he's riding on one of the floats, and all the servants are helping carry the float. And everybody, you know, that's not absolutely the truth, but they're worshiping in the temple of some god somewhere. And so all the servants are down, and Potiphar's in the parade with the Pharaoh or something, and she's at home by herself. Now, why didn't she go? Well, maybe she's got a plan. Maybe she's planning this. Maybe she's not invited. Maybe, you know, whatever. But she's at home. Why is Joseph not there? Well, the fact that Potiphar can go down and ride the float and throw candy to the crowd is because Joseph's going to stay home and manage the estate. So one day he went to the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. And apparently Potiphar's not there either. She caught him by his cloak and said, again, everyone's going to make a deal. His first coat got him in trouble. This is a different word, but it's the word clothing. And it doesn't mean the word, it means clothes. It can be coat, it can be undergarments, it can be a shirt, part of his clothing. So that's all we have right there. It could be an outer garment, it could be an inner garment. We're assuming it's an outer garment. She caught him by his coat or cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." Once again, that's only two words in the Hebrew. "Sleep with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Now, she's going to use that a couple different ways. When she saw that he had left his cloak, and now she's got a problem, in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Now, again, where did these guys come from? Maybe they're her servants and all the other servants were gone, and she'd got them busy, you know, doing whatever, organizing her makeup or something, I don't know. And she called her household servants, and she says, "Look," she said to them, "this," and she's going to just, again, it's going to be a great job of lying, well thought out, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed." That's loaded with information. "This Hebrew," okay, "has been brought to us." Now, she's going to eventually, you know who she's going to blame for bringing him? She's going to blame, when she talks to her husband, "You brought him. This mistake begins with you bringing in this sex fiend," or whatever. But she says to her servants, and she's going to talk to the servants, and then she's going to talk to her husband. And it's interesting, at least, to compare it. If it means anything, I don't know, but I think it does. It's all the story we've got. She speaks one way to the servants. Now, you've got the truth that happened. You've got what she tells her servants. And then she's got what she tells her husband, Potiphar. And so we know what happened. Now the servants are going to be told a story to get them on her side. And one of the big things is, she says to here right here, "He came into here to sleep with me." Now, she's not going to say that to her husband. She's going to, what this means is, "He came in here to have sex with me. He came in here to get in bed with me. This Hebrew has been brought to us." He's not even one of us. He's a foreigner. And he's been brought to make sport of us. And that sport, I've got that in the next box. You can look there in the next page. And it's going to be used again. It's shahak, S-A-H-E-Q, transliterated. And you see it's la shahak. And the la in the Hebrew means to mock us, to laugh at us, to play sport with us. He's been brought here to play with us. He's playing with us. And he wants to, and here, which is in the Hebrew, "He came in to me to lie with me," which means, "Came in to lie with me" means to have sex with me in bed. Okay, so that's important to see that. Now notice I wrote there, "came in to lie with me" is much more specific than "he came into me." Because if you want to jump down to verse 39:17, I've got it circled there. Now she's talking to her husband saying, "came in to me the Hebrew servant. So she doesn't say, he came in to have sex with me. He just came into me. He just came in and I was startled. I mean, so there's, she paints the picture for the servants, but she leaves some room for Potiphar to kind of like, well, what was that all about? Well, I don't know. You decide. But look, I picked up his cloak. Now, she grabbed his coat and he ran away. Okay, now that's, how did you, Potiphar, I got his coat. Potiphar would say, well, how did you get his coat? Oh. Well, when he ran away, I held on to it. Oh. So she's going to tell Potiphar, it was laying on the floor. Which means, he came into me and his clothes were laying all over the floor. What do you think was going to happen? It's like, oh my gosh. So she's, well, let's read it. Let's go down to verse 39, 17. Then she told him this story. That Hebrew slave you brought us, right there, see? That Hebrew slave, he's a foreigner. He's a slave. He's not even one of us. And if I remember right, you're the one that brought him in the house. Did you even do a background check before you put him in charge of everything? You left him with the kids. You left him with the women servants. Who knows what this Hebrew foreigner is going to be doing? What do they do in their country? Well, you brought us, that Hebrew slave you brought us came to make sport of me. He came to play with me. And it goes on. Came to play. Brought us. Oh, right, yeah. There she doesn't say came in to sleep with me. I've got it. It's just in the Greek English. Brought us, came to me to make sport of me. And I've got that circled. Came in to me. Where up to the servants, it says, he came in to lie with me, to her husband. He came in to me. Which means, and then it says, oh, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Meaning there, it gives the impression they're laying there. He was undressing himself. He came in and he's laying his clothes there by me. And again, that can be laying by me or laying just in the room somewhere. So the story is developed. Now, she says she screamed. Now, just important. Point one in the middle of page four, calling out, according to Deuteronomy and including to, you know, the ancient laws, if a woman cries out when she's being approached sexually, that clears her name. And here's Deuteronomy 22:23. If there is a betrothed virgin and a man meets her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city and you shall stone them to death with stones. My body, my choice. It's like, nope. You're a virgin in the street and you're betrothed to marry someone and someone rapes you, we're stoning you both. What? Well, what were you doing in the street? What were you doing alone? It's like, no, you're, it's like that would change the dress code. The young woman, because she did not cry for help, though she was in the city, and the man, because he violated his neighbor's wife. So the man is being stoned to death because he committed adultery. The woman is being stoned to death because you're in the city, in the street, and you're not crying out for help. What were you doing there? What were you dressed like? And it doesn't say that. But what were you doing in the street? And why were you not crying out because there's men all around to come help you? Bad choices. But if in the open country a man meets a young woman who is betrothed and the man seizes her and lies with her, then only the man who lay with her shall die, but you shall do nothing to the young woman. She has committed no offense, punished by death. For this case is like that of a man attacking and murdering a neighbor. But anyway, the idea that she cries for help. And so, just interesting, she makes sure everybody knows, and I screamed for help. Now, she didn't, but that's her story, and she's sticking with it. Okay, I'm going to read verse 39:15. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept the cloak beside her until his master came home, trying to keep the crime scene as pure as possible. Then she told him this story, that Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Now, how does he leave his cloak beside her unless he took it off? Which means she gives the impression he's undressing and coming into my bedroom. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Now, there's a lot of room in, especially as the rest of the story goes. Your first reading, and it's probably correct, your first reading is he burned with anger against Joseph. And if he's burning with anger with Joseph, you know what he's going to do with his slave. He's going to take him out back. He's going to skin him alive and let everyone know you don't do this to my... In the Hebrew law, you would take him out and stone him. And just one stone doesn't kill you. They pile up on you and you get unconscious and you just get riddled with stones. There, did you see that? That's what happens to the man who tries to sleep with my wife, if his anger is burning. But if you read the rest of the story, he takes him to the other part of the house in another division, puts him in the prison with the prisoner, the guard of the prison, and says, "Take care of him there." And the guard of the prison, if Potiphar had gone to him and says, "This man tried to rape my wife. Keep him in prison. Make his life miserable." "Will do, sir." But the next verse says, and the jailer goes, "You know what? You've got some skills." And the Lord gave him favor, and he put him in charge of the prison. So now Joseph's running around with the keys to the prison, and he meets the political prisoners of the Pharaoh. So clearly, there's some room for, like, why is he not out back suffering and being killed for trying to rape your wife? And, okay, you put him in prison. Well, why is he not in a dungeon starving? Or why is the jailer not warned? Because the first thing the jailer does is put him in charge of the jail. It's like the story doesn't fit. So you go back. Again, when his master heard the story, his wife told him. That's just it. When my son told me the story about what happened at school, I called the teacher to find out if that's really what happened. So when his master heard the story his wife told him, he called Joseph to hear what he had to say. That's not in there. He doesn't call Joseph because it's his wife. She's telling a story. What's he going to do? He's got his wife, reputation, his servant. If Joseph explains this to me, it's probably not going to be the same. I mean, he knows Joseph didn't do this. I mean, it's been how many weeks, years, months, and this has never happened. He's heard Joseph talk. Joseph doesn't tell, like, dirty jokes or sexual innuendos, you know, and you're working together and you say something, he goes, "Huh, yeah," and then you say it back to him and then you kind of look kind of funny and it's like these sexual innuendos. Joseph probably hasn't even done that. All of a sudden, what? He's coming into my wife and taking his clothes off? It's like, now you can picture somebody in your head, it's like, yeah, that's probably what happened. But you can also picture somebody, it's like, they don't even take their clothes off in the locker room. It's like, I don't think that's what that guy did. Well, nonetheless, so when we read this, when the master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. That anger may have been towards his wife or towards the situation. It's like, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and that king where the Pharaoh's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness. Now again, the Lord, you've got to think, the Lord, Joseph is taking a shortcut to the throne of Pharaoh. What? It's the shortcut. How is a Hebrew servant going to end up being the visor to the Pharaoh? God says, well, I've got an idea. I'll have this woman lie about him. Potiphar will put him here. I'll bring these prisoners there. He'll meet one of them, interpret the dreams, and get promoted and save the country, and we'll bring the family down. It's like, it's just a shortcut, Joseph. Just a shortcut. We're going to make your life, you're going to go to prison. It's going to be a shortcut to the top. It's like, can I give you some suggestions on shortcuts to the top? But this is God's way of getting him in that place. Joseph, okay, I got all, jails were not common. I've said all that stuff there. Potiphar is the captain of the guard, verse 39:1. This is point 5. Potiphar is the captain of the guard, 39:1. Joseph will meet officials in Pharaoh of Pharaoh in the house of the captain of the guard. Chapter 40, verse 3 says he's in the house of the captain of the guard, where he meets the butler and the baker. Well, who's the captain of the guard? Potiphar is the captain of the guard, and that's where... So Joseph is in the house of Potiphar, the captain of the guard, but he's now moved to the house of the captain of the guard in the prison. So he's just moved from this division to this division, and just, you'll decide what to do with him, and leaves him there. And he gives him the keys, and now he's in charge of the prison. So anyway, that's just interesting. You don't have to accept that, because it doesn't say it like directly, but it's all laying in there in the references, the language. So point C, Joseph continues to work for Potiphar, but is moved to another part of Potiphar's house. Potiphar's original anger may have been directed towards his wife, and Joseph is moved to a different place of authority. There is no recording of Potiphar asking Joseph his side of the story. Chapter 39, verse 21, the Lord was with him there in prison. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. Which is interesting, because the prison warden should be unswayable after he heard what Joseph did to Potiphar's wife after Potiphar reported it. But instead, he sees Joseph and he shows favor to him. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. And he was made responsible for all that was done there. So he's got the keys. He's overseeing all the prisoners and all the things that are done there. If they're making food to feed the prisoner, if they're making license plates, I mean, what are they doing in the prison? Joseph in charge of that whole thing. The warden paid, watch, 39:23. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care. He's golfing. Him and Potiphar are golfing. Well, I thought you had to work there. No, Joseph, guy you sent me, he's running the prison. Oh, well, great. We can golf an extra round today. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care. Now, you'd think if Potiphar had says, this guy's just trying to rape my wife, he wouldn't be saying, I'm paying no attention to what Joseph's doing. That's what got Potiphar in trouble. Potiphar says, you don't need to even worry about him. I think my wife had something to do with that. Because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Once again, the Lord is there. Look at 39:22.1, the word placed. Potiphar placed Joseph in prison, chapter 39:20. Yahweh disposed the chief jailer in his favor, or Yahweh places favor on Joseph for the jailer to see, and then the jailer places the prisoners in Joseph's charge in 39:22. So Potiphar places Joseph in the prison, the Yahweh places favor on Joseph for the guard to see. The guard places Joseph in charge of the whole prison. So there it is, just place. Joseph is just, you're getting a roadmap to the top in Joseph's life. And again, it's not like, well, if you go to prison, things will just work out. Well, if you go to prison the way Joseph went to prison, with Joseph's character in his culture, this is the way. I'm not going to advise that for, here in 2025. That's the shortcut to the top. But in Joseph's life, it certainly was. And again, Lord's favor was on him, and we can take lessons from that. We can be encouraged. And the moral lesson is Joseph feared God and did what was right in God's eyes, and God continued to show favor for Joseph. But of course, God's got a plan for Joseph. Joseph has no idea what's about to take place. We'll continue this next week. I appreciate you being here. It means a lot to me that you are here listening to Bible teaching and letting me explain the Bible. I can't say that sincere enough. It means a lot that you are listening to me explain the Bible, because if you weren't, I would be at home making videos at my desk talking to, three people that accidentally bumped into it online or something. So I appreciate you being here. Father, we do thank you for your word. We thank you for the chance to hear it. We ask that we would examine our own hearts, that we would take advice from the life of Joseph, but also that we would trust the fact that you are leading and guiding us and placing us in positions and using all things for your glory to lead us to the place you want us. And we humbly want to follow your plan for our lives and do the things you've called us to, and just ask that the Spirit of God, the Word of God, would give us strength and encouragement to continue to trust you and follow you and walk in faith. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here.